So a few years ago, and I hesitate to say how many, I think 6 or 7 years ago, we had something we don't have a lot of, but we had a panel discussion on solubility, because I'd been hearing from a lot of people it was important, and then I heard from one or two people they thought it was totally unimportant, so I'm like, well, which is it? Because it was around that time we were thinking about investing in polymorph, and it's one of the things which could come out of an accurate prediction of crystal energies is that it's one step further than to get solubility. So we had a panel discussion, and it was kind of interesting because there was a diversity of views, and so I thought we would try that again. And I'm going to give a few slides just on where I think we are technically, where we're headed technically, and to be able to actually apply physics to calculate something of use to you guys, and then try to get some feedback from these gentlemen as to whether they think it's worth it. Worth a damn or not, and also open up to the audience, because again, I'm really interested in seeing what the kind of community feeling is about this. So, what have I got first? All right, so this was actually something Hari showed yesterday, that basically was an example Pat kind of alerted us to, that the multiple polymorphs of diflunisal. And so, you know, you can see that, like, if you go to a reasonable level of theory, we are actually reproducing the order, and we're not really far off what the actual experimental values are. And for me, this is really interesting. This is physics, right? There's no cheminformatics, there's no machine learning. This is just like applying basic physical principles and getting close to something real. And other than like one of the CSP challenges, which we got kind of exactly right, and I've never seen anything like it, you know, from physics in our field, this is one of the results I'm like, oh, we're on the right track. And I don't think we're there yet. I will say a little bit about that. But here's an example. I said, okay, if we can do diflunisal. There's a really nice paper, which I've used in the context of machine learning, that John Mitchell in St. Andrews in Scotland has been working on solubility from the theoretical side and experimental side for a long time. He's got a set of drugs, which is kind of well measured. And he did this nice test to see whether human experts could predict solubility better computers. And the basic bottom line was like, no. It's basically like, you know, at least on the size of training set, which was small, so you might say it's not something machine learning necessarily would be good at. There was really very little difference between either the average performance of different machine learning methods compared to the average performance on humans, and the humans were some experts and some people who had just walked in off the street and were given the kind of pattern matching technique a challenge. And if you looked at the best performing human, which was an expert as it happened, against the best performing machine learning, again, there was nothing in it statistically. You know, the human was slightly better, but you know, I wouldn't bet on that. But what was really interesting in this set, I thought, was this graph. And this is like if you looked at the set, the test set of 25, and looked at where the errors were, both for machine learning and humans, they're pretty consistent. And what you saw is that it was on the extremes. So if you went to the very soluble, the very insoluble, neither machine or humans were doing very well. And you could drill down and see this is probably because there were less exemplars of those in the data set. So people just didn't know what really to compare to. And if you look at those four, you can kind of see, you know, one reason why that might be is it's like pteridine, which like you really got to know. It's most similar in the training set was guanine, right? And guanine is relatively soluble. Insoluble. It's insoluble because it packs really, really well. But you look at pteridine, it doesn't pack well. And there's very little way you can get that unless you do the actual physics or crystallography to actually see that. So this is kind of basic physics things which underlies why people weren't able to predict that very well. And here's the whole four of the four compounds from those outliers, two which are very soluble, two which are very insoluble. And so I asked Grigori, part of our polymorph team, to have a go predicting the solubilities. You can see the human errors. In machine errors, you're typically off by 2 or 3 kcals, right? And so what we're seeing is that as you kind of increase the level of theory, we're not getting the right answer, right? But we're getting closer than the intuition, right? This is what you expect from physics. Physics is not intuition, right? It's basically physics. And so we are getting closer, and where we're making errors, the errors in the right direction now. So we're actually saying that the insoluble compounds, we're just predicting them to be too insoluble, and the soluble compounds can be too soluble. And so this is something now we can drill in on. We should be getting these answers right, unless the experiments are wrong. right, which is also possible, as we've seen from the solvation competitions that Dave Mowley and John Shadow and I have been doing. So, and we won't go back and check that, but these should be well known because they're well-known compounds, and so we should be getting those right. And this is now a task for my team, and I think, well, certainly my team, but hopefully more in the community, to say there should be no outliers, right? We should be getting these right. And as we move towards getting these right, I think it's physics, right? It doesn't fail. Like, there is a cause. We eventually will get, you know, experimental accuracy with these methods. And this is just to kind of show you, like, kind of the path we're on. So with that in mind, these are not necessarily, I mean, the IFF calculations are relatively cheap, but the others, which involve quantum, require us to use Orion at some scale, and it costs some money, and these are probably a few hundred dollars, for which you might just want to do the measurement. But we're on a path, we're on a trajectory, because this is a science process of looking at your outliers, seeing what's really going on, improving your calculation, where we will be getting to a point where we can calculate these things. So the question is, should we bother, right? Is this something which is that important? I think it's important because it shows, like, the, I think I have one last slide, thoughts on this. This looks like, we may not have to be as accurate for polymorph, for solubility or polymorph, because close-lying polymorphs may be different in kilojoules, whereas within a kilocalorie, you're probably going to get a useful solubility number. And I know one of these gentlemen, at least, is going to say, and it is not aqueous, it's not water we care about. It's like, you know, there you go, moving into other things. But those things typically are just have more ions in. They're in the gut or so forth. And so forth, far, we've had pretty good success with PB. And we know that PB is great for ionic environments. That's what it does best in. So I think we may have that covered. So I have some optimism that we can actually take this into areas which, even beyond, like, the pure theoretical, can be more useful. So with that, I'm going to turn over to panel, and we'll start with Juan just to say his little piece about where he thinks the importance lies and maybe what the other challenges are. So Juan.
So I fall into the group that does not think that we should spend a whole lot of time predicting equilibrium solubilities of different polymorphs from CSP, and we should focus on potentially other properties that are three-dimensional that come from these CSP calculations. And partly the reason is we need to figure out what is the problem that we're trying to solve. So when in the process would we do this prediction, this calculation? But by the time you've got your API and you're trying to optimize a form, at that point, like you just said, we can measure it, so let's just go measure it. So if we're going to predict it, it's got to be somewhere earlier in the process when we're trying to make decisions on what API you might want to advance. I haven't seen too many things fail because of an inability to formulate and get sufficient solubility enough to give you the right bioavailability, which actually doesn't have to be that large. And a lot of the things that we're more interested about is the kinetics. So the dissolution rate, do you get enough in? And then what's the rate of permeation? If the rate of dissolution and the rate of permeation are okay, then you're going to get your bioavailability. And you might never actually reach that saturation equilibrium solubility in the actual process, right? And so I think as we discuss it, there's a couple of things that I would, just to plant seeds in people's mind in terms of the discussion. One is, like I said, what is the problem that we're trying to solve, and where in the process we do that? What level of accuracy and throughput will we need to apply it at that location? And then three things, or two other things. Of what? So we want to, what is our solute? Is it the API? Is it the salts? Is it hydrates? Is it solvates? Is it co-crystals? This explodes into different spaces. So in discovery, we generally know the API. We might know a crystalline form or two, but we don't know what that exhaustive crystalline form set is going to be in terms of like I said, hydrates, salts, and potentially co-crystals. So one is, what is a solute? And the other one is what Anthony mentioned. And so of what and in what? Is it water? Is it simulated gastric fluid? Is it fed? Is it fasted? Is it formulated drug product with permeation enhancers already in there? So there's a lot of components here, and there are things that we put into formulations that supersaturate, right? And you do have the chance that it's going to precipitate out after you supersaturate, but the goal here is to supersaturate such that you get some bioavailability. And so again, it's a complex question. So it's not as simple as just having a 3D CSP of the unformulated API and measuring an aqueous solubility, because I'm not sure that moves the needle for us in terms of the needs for pharmaceuticals. And as we go through being able to predict crystal structures, I'd be more interested in things like kinetics, like dissolution rates, which is correlated to solubility, so that's not completely unrelated, but also things like morphologies, for example. So if you're getting thin needles, how do you grow the crystal into a particular dimension so you get better crystals, and you can actually manage the materials properties. Wettability is another big one, and we do put wettability enhancers within formulations in order to get things to dissolve faster, for example. But I think that's where I'm going to stop for now and pass it on to Eric, maybe.
Maybe.
Maybe. Okay, Carlton.
Yeah, I have to say, so I largely agree with Juan. We, in fact, had a long discussion about this. We pre-gamed the other day, and I'd say 99% I agree with. I would say there's a little bit of nuance here. So I think outright just prediction of solubility, you know, if you could do it quickly and cheaply enough, we do a lot of front-end experiments that aren't necessarily reflective of the true thermodynamic solubility. So you could potentially get an efficiency gain. It wouldn't be transformative. But if you could do the predictions quickly enough, you might just not bother doing the sort of quick kinetic solubility experiments that you do earlier on. As I mentioned the other day, I'm a believer in understanding what you're dealing with. So it's not so much predicting solubility, but if you have a case where you have an insoluble molecule and you're banging your head against the wall trying to figure out what to do, if you can peer into, is the problem because I just have these interactions in the crystal that I can't get around, that might help your decision making and how to proceed at a number of phases along drug discovery or development. At the end of the day, I see the real value as a stepping stone to getting to properties like dissolution, predicting extreme habit formation, the wettability, and there's a whole host of issues, mechanical properties and whatnot that we have to deal with. So solubility could be a stepping stone to that, and you know, because we don't want to boil the ocean, we're trying to solve the most straightforward problems initially. This might be one way to get there. One of the questions I have, and again, it's similar to I think what I heard Juan say, is how good do you need to be in order to do all of those things? So, you know, as Ant points out on this slide, you may only need to be so good to predict actual solubility, but if you're going to use it as a stepping stone to predict other things, how good do you need to be to get there? When do you move on to the next problem?
All right.
I think, Colton, you were on the original panel, were you not?
I was.
Yes, I'm just, yeah. Yeah. Welcome back.
Oh, thank you. It's good to be here. Good to be here back in sunny Santa Fe. Initially, I totally agreed with these guys. But now, as my mind has gone back in time, there have been some times where early in discovery, knowing the solubility can be really, really important. There was one project I worked on my first job at Medizin, where we were working on PI-1 inhibitors. And these compounds that we found were so insoluble, we actually had to measure the compounds in the assay to determine how much was there so that we could get IC50s. So there certainly are places where this would be translational, like hugely transformational. This would be really important. The other place where, even in later stages of drug discovery, is if you're going to do an IV formulation, solubility is going to be one of the most important properties, because you've got to be able to know that when you put that dry compound into a bag and solubilize it, it's going to go in as you expect it to. So initially, you know, I said it, in fact, on the original panel, I said it wasn't, when working on these GPCR targets, low solubility never killed a project. It was always something else. There was always, almost always, a way to formulate your way out of the problem. But there are places where it's really important.
So before I get to the questions, you got your own mic, right? No. No, you won't take it. No, I don't.
You said different one, aren't you?
We actually let Pat jump in. But I just want to say, it's like, one of these, I said this because a certain company, I won't name their name, who I have close relationships, visit often, I was kind of shown one of the secret slides of like causes of failure of over 100 products they try to put in the clinic. And half of them, they marked solubility, which is why I was like, oh, maybe that's important. So back when we had that first panel, I was expecting you all to go, yes, Anthony, it's like really important. And then Colin was just like, nah, he just reformulated away. And that was a shock, and it's still a shock for me for you to say, like, well, it doesn't really matter, and you're the experts. But you know, it's hard for a poor software vendor to know what to do, right? Unless we kind of get a clear kind of vision of like, well, what are the critical problems, which is part of why we're having this discussion. So can I answer that, and I'll pass it over to Pat.
I mean, just to be clear, it's not that solubility isn't important. It's just whether predicting it at this level. They're different questions.
And I just wanted to just comment on Carlton's, when he said early in discovery. I think partly what we're talking about here is equilibrium solubility from a solid form. And you know, as was highlighted in the presentation and was highlighted by Pat, we're talking about the differences in solubility that come from the different polymorphs and predicting the actual form, which is often not the starting point in a discovery assay early on. So that's an inherent solubility problem, not an equilibrium solubility problem, and this wouldn't actually solve that question. So again, we just need to be clear of what is the problem that we're trying to solve from these calculations specifically. It's not that some of the molecules are not insoluble, but it's really about the application of CSP leading to solubility predictions relative to solid state in an equilibrium format type of thing.
Pat.
But I think from an early discovery standpoint, I don't necessarily want to be able to predict the solubility. I've got something that's brick dust. I actually worked on a compound that was less soluble than brick dust. It's now a marketed drug. But anyway, what you want to do is you want to make that better, right? You want to improve the solubility. And really, there's two approaches you can take there. You can lower the log P. That's one of the few things we actually know how to do, right? Medicinal chemists can do that. Or you want to break up the crystal lattice. I can get a CRO to give me a small molecule crystal structure for $1,000. So I don't really need to be able to predict that. So, I mean, to me, at least, you know, I'm a discovery guy. And from my standpoint, it's always make it better. And make it better is either lower the log P or look at the crystal structure and figure out how I can try to break up some packing interaction.
Yeah, but surely that's like the same as everything. You go measure the affinity of the compound rather than predict it. If we can actually do it on the computer faster and with reasonable accuracy, which I think we could do, I guarantee you in a few years we'll be able to predict solubility as well, or the crystal structures as well as the experiment. In a much shorter period of time and cheaper. So, yeah. I mean, if we all feel that's worth the effort, right?
Yeah, and obviously, companies like if you could get to a point where I could say, great, here's 1,000 compounds that I'm thinking about making. Mm-hmm. Tell me the ones that are going to give me at least a 10x solubility boost mm-hmm. over what I currently have. Mm-hmm. I'll buy that.
Mm-hmm. So it's a scale thing. You think that was
it's because to me the polymorph problem and the solubility problem are really two completely different issues. The polymorph issue is I don't want to have a problem when I get into manufacturing.
Right, yeah, sure.
Yeah,
sure.
But, you know, from my standpoint, at least in discovery, it's always just been how do I make this molecule more soluble?
I 100% agree, Pat. Carlton and I were talking yesterday. I think may have talked about this with Eric also. I mean, we all know that if you plot activity versus log P, there's often a correlation there, right? If a lot of your potency is coming purely from the log P of the molecule, you're not doing a good job. We're not doing a good job. We in our craft should be driving to the outliers that are much more potent than their solubility would predict just from a sample log, from simple log P plot. If we're not doing that well, that's our problem. And we need to fix that and not necessarily push it on to the formulators. So 100% agree.
And I think there may be an element of that as I my opinion about the FEP is that it's being useful in finding the outliers, things which are much more potent than you would think. And I think that's what this would initially be useful, is that, wow, this compound is really soluble, because like with pteridine, it just doesn't pack well, right? And that's not something you're going to see by eye. Look, you know, who knows? Some people get expert at anything. Yes, Jeff.
So just a couple comments. Is this on?
No. Oh, yeah. It is.
No, it is. Okay. So, Pat, our success rate in improving solubility has not been as good as what you described. We get small molecule crystal structures pretty routinely. We have a small molecule crystallographer in-house, and he's got, you know, magic fingers and can crystals pretty quickly. But like a common scenario, like kinase inhibitors, right? Typically, the stuff you'd want to do to break up their lattice are the very interactions that they use to bind to the enzyme. So our empirical ability to fix those things is not great. Lowering log P, not good enough usually. So it's a hard problem. It can be solved, but what I look at there is it is a rate-limiting problem in many of our projects, and chemistry will iterate quite a while trying to fix that. You know, we focus on predicting human dose, right, which, you know, is a complex function of a whole bunch of things. If the solubility can't get to where we need it to be, you're done. So I think that's still a highly critical one. It gets into something Juan mentioned too. What solubility do you want to predict that the chemist should be optimizing? Is it kinetic? Is it fast, FASF, or any of those flavors? We have internal controversies about that. On the polymorph side, I agree with Pat, it's a related but different problem. And yeah, the formulations guys can eventually figure most things out, but if we give them molecules that are better behaved, they can get there way faster and much cheaper. We've had several projects that can take them months to a year to figure out, and these are very expensive syntheses. They have to make large quantities of molecule to try all these different formulations experiments. And so speed matters, right? So that's why I think I don't know which solubilities are the right ones to guide medicinal chemists on. Kinetic solubility is useful early on. As we get into later stage stuff, though, the other solubilities probably will overtake it. We just don't have enough data. By the way, a lot of these ideas are driven by a guy that came out of Merck. Yeah. Dennis Lung. He would have left before you got there. Yeah. But, so learning a lot from him. But yeah, I guess my opinion from what I've seen internally is polymorph prediction stuff does matter. We're already seeing that can speed up work because they don't have to do as much upfront synthesis to do all the polymorph screening. And better solubility prediction. We can predict brick dust pretty well and moderately soluble, but the difference between that and soluble enough, we can't do. Yeah. And that could be game changing if we could get there.
Do you find that formulation's critical path in development ever?
It's a rate limiting path.
So you do think it's critical? Sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Because I have found in most projects, formulation is not
the critical path item. It's often, it's a synthesis, the stability, it's all the other things that take, you know, wall clock time, right? So if you need to get 6 months stability, you need to get 6 months stability. So you've got 6 months.
Well,
right.
That's rate limiting too. But once you solve that, then
well, only one thing is rate limiting, right? Only one thing can be rate limiting.
Yeah.
And I don't know if I know of any time where formulation is, but anyway.
Now we've had a few where it took them a year or so to crack the problem, or a couple others where they thought they had it solved, and then, well into the development cycle, magic happens and they get crystals, and you get to start over again, right? So that's a rare occurrence though.
The polymorph switch.
Yeah. Well, or getting crystals at all where they'd been working with.
Right. And so, sorry, just so I'm not misconstrued, I'm a big fan of CSP.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? I think that's game changing. I'm really focused here on predicting solubility once you have predicted crystal forms.
Right. So Jeff, how do you define soluble enough? I'm right here. It sounds like I'm coming from everywhere.
Right. So really, really good question. So through
fine, but yeah,
right. Not so back. Through tools like GastroPlus, SimSip, other things that we have, you guys probably have too. our DMPK folks have, say, moderately good models for predicting human dose. Solubility factors into that. So that's ultimately the measure that we'll use. You'd like to be able to drive these predictions earlier on in chemistry to find out if a series you're working on has any chance of getting you where you want to go. And I don't think we're good enough at that yet. So we have had several series that we just have to abandon because we can never get them soluble enough to achieve a reasonable human dose.
Right, and part of the reason for my question was on Ant's slides that the range of solubilities you're considering there, many of them would be soluble enough. There aren't too many in that distribution plot you have that would be outside of.
Oh, you mean the one with.
Yeah,
the
if you want to go back. Your slides, you could talk about that, right. So those log S's, right? You've only got like four molecules.
Right on the far left hand.
On the far left, that are sort of outside of the BCS classification of soluble.
Right, but I did see because in my reading on this, so if you go to like World Health Organization, you look at like drugs, like the percentage of compounds they call very soluble is really quite low, right? So it does seem like it's not that. I mean, I get the impression, again, this is from somewhere outside, you know, actually making these molecules, that you get it to be soluble enough and you say, good, done, get it in the clinic, as opposed to, you know, pushing on that once it's past a certain threshold. Is that true? That's kind of like it's just limiting, you get it soluble enough and then you just don't care.
Yeah.
I mean, I like the point you made about using systems modeling to basically figure out the profile, what's the target profile that you need? And then, I mean, from a chemistry perspective, then it's a question of, is that achievable? Can I get there? That's where this type of modeling, I think, could potentially be helpful in extreme cases and understanding, like, is this even achievable, or am I doomed because I can't change, if I change the log P, or if I break up the interactions in the crystal, I'm going to kill my potency, and I'm never going to be able to solve the problem, versus am I going to be able to get to that soluble enough?
I think we're facing harder and harder drug targets and molecules. So, many of our organizations are interested in PROTACs, degraders, macrocycles. It gets even tougher when you're in that space, right?
But the challenge there is going to be permeability more than solubility.
Solubility is a problem too. Yeah, you got to get them both right.
I'm coming. So how much of this solubility issue can be mitigated?
you got to put it up to your mouth.
Thank you. Okay. How much of this solubility problem can be mitigated by formulation? For example, for a number of our projects, we use it like a nanoparticle formulation. We embed the compound in a nanoparticle. It gets in to the cell, and then it breaks apart, and it delivers the compound. Have you guys had a lot of experience in these areas?
I mean, I don't want to speak for anyone else. I mean, yeah, a lot of times those things are solvable, mm-hmm. but you either need to swarm a lot of resource on the project, or it's either resource or time. You're going to lose in some way. And you have a whole development portfolio that you have to deal with, so it's a zero-sum game. So, I agree with you, but I'm not sure. I don't like the idea of sort of, well, leave it up to the formulators, I guess.
Right.
We just need to have clarity of the problem here coming from a predicted crystal structure, right? So when you say nanoparticles to get into a cell, that's a different problem. Now we're talking about cell penetration, now we're talking about targeting, and now we're talking about probably parenteral delivery, which is, again, out of scope for partly this discussion. Now, we do nanoemulsions, we do add lipids. I mean, there's things you can do formulating to increase solubility, and I mean, one common thing now, and people are spending a lot of time on this, right, is the exact opposite of starting with a crystalline material, and is it starting with an amorphous film. Right, and then you get into spring and parachute and supersaturation again, and hoping to have like precipitation
delayers or preventers, right, within your formulation. So all that comes into play, but these are the tools that the formulator has. So I would say that spray drying or an amorphous dispersion is probably the tool you go to if you want to enhance solubility and bioavailability of an insoluble molecule. And again, it takes it out of scope of this prediction. And so these are these competing technologies that if they get good could obsolete this. Mm-hmm. With ionizable APIs, we always go to salts, right? Salts is the go-to thing that increases the solubility. For neutral molecules, we can't necessarily do salts, and I think that's where co-crystals are going to become the thing. Mm-hmm. And so I think one of the arms of CSP that's really attractive to me is when you get to crystal engineering, is you start predicting crystal structures, right, and you start generating these predictive co-crystals that become the salts of neutral molecules that then hopefully solve a great majority of your insoluble compound problems.
Right. And I guess there you have a predicted structure and a predicted solubility to go with it. You could make decisions. Is that your view?
Sure.
That was very convincing.
I don't know if you need the predicted solubility piece, though. I think I don't know if you need the predicted solubility piece.
Wait a minute. You're saying like, yes, you could reformulate with an excipient, in the crystal, but that's what we could predict.
We could.
So isn't that like valuable? Isn't that like a reason to do that?
I think the important thing to do is to predict the structure to then generate the sample, and then you have it, right? I mean, once you have your API.
But I'm not clear what you're saying. It's like there's the polymorph problem, which is like if you add this, does this make the crystal more stable? But the physical property that comes out of that really is like, well, is it destabilizing the crystal or not for solubility, right?
Sure.
So isn't that what we're saying here?
It is, but I think what I'm saying is if you get good at engineering them, then you just measure them.
I guess if you only have
a few... have the API, if you get good at engineering them, it's no different than having a hypothesis on a discovery molecule and synthesizing it and testing it.
So I guess for the number of things you would put in a co-crystal is not that large. So that's the number of things you could potentially design is small. So I guess you're pointing out if you just make them, just make it, measure it.
But gentlemen, why don't you just calculate it? I mean, why make them if you can calculate it?
Make them anyway.
Well, just make the ones you need rather than
then you have to cost it out, right? Yeah. So if it's cheaper to do the calculation, you have to calculate it. And then you confirm.
I guess. I mean, I think we're talking like small levels of cost here. Yeah, like, okay, we're not talking about anything expensive, right? Yeah. So by the time a molecule gets in development, you've got kegs of the stuff. Yeah, you've got mm-hmm. kilograms of the molecule.
Yeah,
the
I suppose API, at that stage, right? It's not a big deal. Just
right?
To, like,
and having doing a small screen with excipients takes me less than a week to get all of them screened and get all the data.
Okay.
Even if I could calculate it in a minute, why would I not just do it?
Actually, Chris is next, and I'll hand off to Brock next.
Once you know it's what you want to put on the market, you can, often but not always come up with the formulation to take care of it. I think the real issue here is the brick dust early in the program issue, because that is not only about will we be able to carry this forward and, make a final clinical candidate that we can formulate, because you only hope you can, you don't know you can, but also just ongoing for the lead optimization. If you're working with brick dust all the time, it affects all your assays and all your testing through the process. So on that issue of the brick dust early in the project, what my prior experience was you could get the small molecule crystal structure done quite handily, and then you could have the actual crystal structure to try and solve this perturbatively to fix the solvation, how to disrupt the crystal. But when you do that, that's assuming that what you do to disrupt the crystal is going to like mean that it will become soluble. What I think is a real help is on your final slide, Ant, where you're saying you don't have to do the polymorph, you just need to know if this is going to be stable. Where our current process of this perturbative correction breaks down is when, yes, you don't form that crystal structure, but you form another brick dust structure, which isn't far away. all kinds of kinase inhibitors form all kinds of different crystal structures that are brick dust. And this is where I think there's an opportunity for the crystal prediction to say, as we've done our, you know, taking our crack at fixing, disrupting the crystal lattice interactions in the known crystal, is this going to form a new crystal, which is just as bad? And the prediction could help us there.
I guess maybe something that might be related to this, I had this in my head after the discussion just now with Juan. I guess imagining you're on a team that has a molecule or a substance that has a solubility issue, and you have to convince that team to pursue a co-crystal strategy. So it may not cost that much, but there's resource, and it would take the team in a different direction. So presenting them, hey, I've engineered this crystal, versus, hey, I've engineered this crystal, and I also have an estimate that the solubility would improve by 10x or more, I could see that convincing strategy. It's kind of like, you know, just to, I don't know if this is a good analogy, but it's like, you know, docking versus FEP. I can dock something in and tell a team that, hey, this looks good, or I could also present them with a more rigorous assessment. And if the team is working on 20 other things and I have to convince them to shift resource, the extra level of rigor, I could imagine helping. Cut across, Brock.
Yeah, so I had one comment and then one question. The comment is, you got to worry about solubility a little bit earlier, because when you go into preclin, you have to get an MTD. So you really have to have some solubility. You can't wait for your dev guys to get on it. The question I had is a scientific question. Has anybody ever seen anybody work on the solubility of an amorphous solid or a spray dispersion? I'm just kind of curious how you'd attack that computationally, and I think it would be interesting to see if that might be a simpler problem to solve.
Yeah, we have thought about it.
I thought of something you mentioned. Increasingly, on many of our projects, we're driven by safety tox considerations to have to scale up molecules for animal testing.
I think that's what Brock was just talking about.
Testing before we've even declared a development candidate. So we have to, the process chemists and the formulations group have to go through the scale up. Some of these are really expensive syntheses and make significant quantities. It's not necessarily kilos, but it could be, to compare multiple molecules, one of which, if we're lucky, will be a development candidate. And then it rolls into the formulations group, and they have a difficult problem to solve. So I think that's why I'm increasingly interested in being able to predict this stuff early, de-risk stuff before, you know, we have to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars and months to do scale up for a molecule that may not even make it, right?
Jeff, I was trying to say exactly that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's what I heard. All very valid points. All very valid points. I would say that in preclin, it's about exposures, right? And a lot of times, I mean, you want the same route of administration, but you can dose solutions, you can dose suspensions. I mean, there's a lot of tricks that we can play to increase the exposure to get you the exposure. But yes, agreed, 100% agree. I agree.
So I've got a question that, in your experiences, you know, see if this resonates or not. You know, I've worked on a number of projects where much earlier in the discovery process, you know, you run into this issue of very low solubility compounds. And then, you know, at some point, you know, you're tens of compounds in, you have to decide whether to embark on a log P lowering campaign or not. So I guess the question I have is anecdotally, I've worked with med chemists who say if it's a lattice packing issue, right, in terms of equilibrium solubility, that formulation can fix it better than if it's a intrinsic, like hydration, right? So is there value in an expensive calculation at that earlier stage where you may not know the final crystal form, but at the very least to help ballpark what the source of your problem is before you have to make another tens or 100 compounds to get the log P correlation and show that it's not in fact driven by that? Or is that not accurate enough to inform that kind of decision?
Yeah, I think that begs a really good question for Ant, which is how much it's going to cost to do the calculation. Like, you can outsource a solubility measurement for $150 or something like that.
Yeah.
If you can't do it in house, right? So that's what we would do. We would outsource it.
But can you use prior to making the molecule, right? I mean,
yeah. Well, I mean, when you've got a small number and you don't know whether you want to break up hacking, which maybe you can do in CoCrystal, or if you need to really embark on, I've got to push a lot of tea down.
Yeah.
I guess partly where again I'm not sure where crystallinity comes into the discussion really early in discovery. I mean we don't often start with crystalline material in terms of, right? So I 100% agree. I think what you're saying, Dimitri, what Pat was saying earlier, what Carlton said, there are times where solubility, where brick dust is a problem in discovery. I 100% agree. I'm not sure that that's a springboard from CSP, though. I think that's a different problem that we have to tackle. And I do agree, if there's a way for us to increase the probability that the things that we're designing are going to be more soluble from an inherent solubility perspective, that makes sense, and we should do that. Right, but that's a different question than having five polymorphs of the same molecule and figuring out what the equilibrium solubility is of each, right? That's just a different problem.
But I think you put your finger on it, right? It's like, I mean, we're driving, I was just to talk to the original CSP team we had, long since gone, that the brass ring is like predicting the low-lying polymorph, but on the way you generate these interesting technologies. And you said the word I like, springboard, right? Yeah, yeah. Where you go next. And solubility, there's a reason we're having discussions, always one which seems to come up in conversation, but I'm interested in the arguments.
And I think CSP is the springboard, and Eric's pointed out that he thinks solubility is the next springboard. And so if solubility is a springboard into a bunch of other things, then we should do it.
Yeah.
I think CSP is a huge springboard, which is why we need to invest in that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But is the solubility the next springboard, or is it something different?
Right. Yeah, and so I don't know that it is, but I could. That's one thing it was worth asking. Right. And just to your point, that's what I was getting at when I was talking about understanding, like understanding what's going on. But I'll also agree that the bar is, so if you can just predict log D and measure melting points and things like that, you should be able to do better than that. I mean, I guess that's sort of your null.
Yeah. I hope so.
So I can actually think of two times in my career where I've seen crystallinity be an impact at the discovery stage. And, one was where we had very low solubility in a project and it was not log P related, which we were able to show. And we did basically what Chris was just talking about, which is had a crystal structure, and we would just modify that structure and try to convince ourselves that it would disrupt the crystal lattice and maybe it would fall into another one, but we would at least then make the compound and try it and see. And we were eventually able to get to a compound that got us to the good enough solubility doing that. But it took us 6 months to actually do that. And if we had a way to do that faster, that would have been something that would be really valuable. And so I think as a tool, once we see a problem, we would be very interested in a tool like this. Would we use it prospectively before we see that solubility issue? Probably not, right? Because it wouldn't hit our radar screen most of the time. The other time we've seen it was actually much later, which was that we were actually able to formulate the compound, bring it pretty close to getting to the clinic when we saw in vivo crystallization, right? So we formulated a compound, we got the PK and the bioavailability we were really interested in, and then we had a tox signal because the compound was crashing out in vivo all over the place. Mm-hmm. The fact that you could see on necropsy, you could see with your eye crystals, right? And you could imagine, could you go back and try to resolve that problem later on using a tool like this? We just abandoned the series, right, and went to something else, which we viewed as being faster.
I mean, this is one of the things that you mentioned in conversations we had about synthesis, right? About whether it would have impact at that point if you knew an intermediate actually was crystallizing, which I guess is not solubility unless. So, but that is something I think, is that a more important direction? Is that like the springboard thing, right? Is that the?
I mean, for me, that is much more important in terms of predicting crystallinity even is more important to me than predicting solubility. Mm-hmm. So that's another question, right? I did mention it within a synthetic process.
Something,
right?
I hadn't thought of, so it was like good to kind of to hear.
Yeah, Evan back there.
From a practical perspective, it seems like most of the discussion on solubility has been around, like, you know, let's take Jeff's kinase example. Like, let's get a potent kinase inhibitor and then worry about the solubility issues after. One is, why not do this in sort of like a joint optimization setting? And is that, if not, is it because you just don't really care as much about solubility as you do about potency? Or is it because the solubility predictors are just so poor that it's not worth doing it jointly because it doesn't add enough signal? And then the corollary would be, what is that RMSE, going back to Ann's earlier slide, at which you want to incorporate solubility prediction adjacent to potency prediction in the discovery phase?
The danger with that question, Evan, is that they will always say, they'll give some ridiculously, I'm saying you, people will give these absurdly small, or you've got to be accurate to like this amount, and you find the experiment is actually this, but they just don't admit it. So I'm saying that just before you answer.
Yeah, before you answer.
You answer that. Yeah. I agree generally with the idea of optimizing simultaneously. I'm not sure that that means predicting the solubility in this way or at this level.
I'm getting conflicted messages on. So given that you're predicting the solubility, with the polymorph problem, like, I'm hearing, like, yes, it matters, yes, it doesn't. Like, does your prediction need to be a function of the molecule and the polymorph or not? Or when do you know if that, how relevant that is?
Yeah, you kind of hit the nail on the head here in terms of when does crystallization become important in our workflows, right, in our processes. Right, and you know, Evan was just asking about do we co-optimize? We always co-optimize. We always aim to get to the potency that we can get to with the most soluble compounds, and by whatever coarse prediction tools we have, to do that in discovery. But crystallinity doesn't come to effect often in that setting, right? Crystallinity comes into effect much more when you're actually trying to develop your dosage form. And we're assuming solid dosage form by an oral route of administration. I think that's the underlying assumption here. So the simplest solid dosage form is going to be crystalline material with a controlled particle size that is then, you know, put into a tablet. Right, or that's going to be your simplest one, and so then you have your formulated drug product in your tablet. It's going to disintegrate. It's going to hopefully dissolve and hopefully get you to some reasonable solubility in your GI tract to get you to the absorption that you need. So that's when we care about what is the solubility of that crystal form, because that's what's going to determine how much is available for the body to absorb at that point. I don't know if that helped. Earlier than that, we don't often start from crystals. Now, I do agree that if you could predict all that late stage super early, it might be useful, except only in the cases where you're anticipating a real problem later on. And as I said at the very beginning, I haven't seen too many projects fail because you can't get to that oral bioavailability for a traditional small molecule, you know, tableted product that can't be solved through then a non-crystalline amorphous dispersion on a capsule or something, right? Yeah, especially if you're potent.
I mean, for me, it may be less about like sort of overall probability of success as opposed to the time it takes to get there and the number of things that you try. So to get back to Evan's point, I could imagine, again, getting back to this understanding what's going on sort of thing. So you have your target. If you understand what the binding determinants are and you have your crystal and you understand what the solubility determinants are, you could do a better design of experiment so that you're doing less random fishing around in space. So it's sort of just, you have a better prior, I guess, with physics potentially. But granted, I've seen the examples that you're talking about with, you know, kinase inhibitors, and if you end up in a situation where the same thing that's leading to insolubility is leading to your potency, then you're out of luck.
You began this with the question, really, is this worth it, OpenEye's trouble to invest in developing this, right? I can tell you what I think we would like to have. I mean, for sure, a predictive tool that we could use for MedChem prediction early on would be great. But, you know, the space I'm targeting right now, looking at CSP and a few other things, is late-stage optimization. We've boiled it down to maybe one or two series. We'll grind away for what could be a year or two trying to fix DMPK problems typically. We can model them pretty well, we can assay them, but it takes a while to grind through all this stuff. At that point, we're using structure-based design, all the other stuff we have to, just to make sure we don't lose potency. We usually got it, we usually have selectivity. Imagine if in that part we had a tool that could predict relative solubility. I've got a choice of analogs to make to test a DMPK hypothesis. You know, maybe I've got a really tough one like chromosomal aberration. You know, nobody's got a clue how to deal with that. It's just like guesswork, pretty much. But we're typically making fairly small changes. If I could prioritize those, just is my solubility likely to go up? I don't have to predict absolute solubility. Just can I get better? It could be. Yeah, I think there we're looking for, yeah, it's a good question, but probably crystalline. Amorphous might be okay, but the formulation guys would rather not go there unless they have to. Mm-hmm. Understanding from them is it's tougher to do that in a reproducible way. It just makes it more complicated, more expensive going forward. So what I'm looking at is a part of that multi-dimensional optimization set of tools, if we had one that could, you know, with modest reliability, predict relative solubility. Just, am I getting better or worse?
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, I want to say just something in that, you know, last cup I talked about the types of surprises you get and how the two which I think, you know, the predictive methods I don't think are particularly good are like the extrapolation, but also the ones which are surprises in your own backyard where you think you know what's going on and suddenly the floor drops out from under you, right? Well, I think physics is the only way you're really going to get those. And that's, again, I didn't kind of bring it up as one of my, you know, topics to bring up if conversation lagged, which it didn't. It's like, how often do you kind of see that thing happen where you're just like suddenly shocked? Like, well, how the hell did that happen? Where like that would be something which would kind of have your back, right? Because it would be looking for those types of things.
I just want to make a comment. I think I completely agree with Jeff and Eric's point about that speed is the issue, and I will say that this will be a very useful tool. If you can predict, I will start to use that in a late stage optimization. As we have more experience, then probably we can push back to the early stage or the first lead up stages. I also want to make a comment, I think, that there was a discussion about we can all solve the simulation problem, but speed is important. And when you come to the late stage, if you're thinking about it, if you can solve problems 6 months or 12 months early, then you can potentially file the compound to NDA filing early. That could go to market 1 year early. That's a lot of money if you use that as a calculation.
I think we're at okay, one more question. We're almost at lunchtime, but A new face does get a mic.
Hey, I'm kind of new to the solubility area, but just in terms of the relative importance to overall solubility prediction, what would you say, like, if you had perfect crystal structure prediction that was, also cheap and fast, would that totally solve the whole problem, or is there still other kind of outstanding things that are not modeled well by the current approaches?
Well, I think this is the crux of the whole thing, right? It's just like if we drive, because we will get to where you just said, but it's a question of do we want to get there next year or do we want to get there in 5 years? Because it's like, there's other things which are important, right?
Right, and that's exactly what it is. It's where do you invest first, right? So nothing that we're saying is not reasonable, and it all comes down to a little bit of what you just pointed out, right? It's throughput and accuracy. Like if we want to do what Jeff says or what Eric said, what is the level of throughput and accuracy that you need in order to get that done well and make decisions, right?
But
and,
I guess apart from the, like, where else do you invest resources aside from solubility prediction? Like, other than crystal structure prediction, in solubility prediction, are there hard problems?
Yeah, so, so I spent a lot of time working with our product development folks leading up to the work we're doing with OpenAI on this, understanding what are the problems they face. So the things they come at us with are like, you know, does this compound have an extreme habit? Because that gets in our way. They ask a lot about mechanical properties, sticking to surfaces. There's a whole laundry list of things that get in their way. Predicting whether things like solvates or hydrates might form with some impurity or something like that. And understanding, is that going to have result in an issue with dissolution? So it's not solubility, but dissolution. That's come up frequently. They typically don't bring up in the development into things. They don't bring up solubility as the issue. I've seen solubility come up in a few cases, like something I hadn't thought of at the time. But in API synthesis, understanding whether something is crystalline or not, it gets back to the crystallinity question, could potentially help them optimize routes. There's a lot other than pure CSP, this whole late-breaking polymorph problem, and just outright predicting thermodynamic solubility.
Okay, well, let's thank the panel for a great discussion.